Good day to you today. This is Kim Harden, and I am reading the Pantograph for Thursday, July 16th, 2026. I like to start with the weather, so just to let you know, today, a stray thunderstorm this afternoon. Expect 6 to 10 hours of sunshine with a 55% chance of precipitation and average relative humidity 70%. Drying conditions are poor. A stray thundershower this evening, chance of precipitation 55% with average relative humidity 90%. Friday, showers and heavy thunderstorms are expected. High 85, low 71. Similar on Saturday, thunderstorm expected. 89 and 70. And it looks like a little bit of a break on Sunday. Mostly sunny and less humid. High of 87 and a low of 70. The opening front page local story today. Food and drink. Hobby ferments into funky brew. Olivia Jacobs writes about four men turn homebrewing into Gridley Gathering Place. Small town brewery in Gridley simply started with Sam Adams beer kit one Christmas. Ben Funk bought the kit for his dad, Bill, who had a birthday around that time, and they decided to start brewing together, a lot which they would do at Funk Farms, and some friends eventually joined on the fun. They had their first public serving of their beer at a friend's wedding around 2010 and officially registered the business as an LLC in 2018. The Funks, along with Andy Zimmerman and Philip Romesberger, spent 2 years gutting and renovating an 1892 building before they officially opened Funky Brew at 102 East 3rd Street in 2024. The brewery celebrated 2 years in June. The whole reason we decided to go into business is just to share our hobby with the community and friends, and the biggest thing for me was just being able to meet all of the people that come in, and I didn't realize I would enjoy that as much as I do. I just enjoy brewing, but the community aspect of it has been really good, Romesberger said. The response, he said, has been very positive. He didn't expect he would enjoy talking to people from behind the bar, he added, but he enjoys meeting people from all over. He said he's surprised by how many people drive 30 minutes to an hour or even come from Chicago to visit the brewery. Among the good things they say is that it has a more chill, comfortable vibe and is not standoffish, he said. The group, which has been homebrewing for over 20 years, initially gained traction during Oktoberfest, which they began at Funk Farms as Funktoberfest. They would spend all year brewing 10-gallon batches and would typically have about 5 to 7 pony kegs for the event, bringing together 100 to 150 people from the area. The event has become a funky brew staple. This led them to being asked to serve the volunteers for the local Christkindl market. However, word got out, so they ended up serving guests throughout the evening. Bill Funk said, adding that let people know that they were trying to do what they were trying to do. At the time, they had 7 brews on tap and could only offer samples by donation only before they obtained their liquor license. The events allowed them to get to know folks in the on the village board, which helped them eventually set up shop in their building. Today, Funk Brew has 12 beers on tap, as well as 2 seltzers on tap. But Bill Funk said they could easily fit 16 or more beers on tap, and they try to make use of as many local ingredients in their brews as possible. Zimmerman said they aren't really in it for the money, but rather for the community. I think the best part about this place, though, is that everyone that comes here, they end up socializing with everyone else. So there's a lot of people meeting new people and really having a good time, he said. And it's great to see the community come together, especially when there's not that many places that people can go together like that anymore, he said. I like that it's bright in here. It's not like you're going into a dark bar setting where you go and you sit and no one really talks. It's more about the conversations than almost even the beer. But the beer is top-notch. Funky Brew's location sat empty for several years after spending time as Pizza Alley and then as apartments. The Mitchell Building was built by James Mitchell and served as a market, a library, a post office. They still have a Dropbox out front and the German-American State Bank, which left behind a vault that they still use. The building's claim to fame, however, dates back to the early 1900s. It was reportedly the last building standing on Main Street beside a nearby hardware store after the Great Gridley Fire in 1901, Bill Funk explained. The owners have Also, the original prism glass, so they have a lot of natural light coming through the brewery during the day. Ben Funk said that when new people come into the space, they always comment on the building. That gives him a good feeling, he said. After all the work that we've put into it, he even was able to find a 5-barrel system back in 2020 for them to brew in. What also sets them apart, Ben Funk said, is their hand-developed beer styles that fit general population's preferences of lower alcohol by volume beers, even though the original vision was to have higher ones. The benefit of being small is you can be creative, and we're not pressured by the masses to do the regular stuff. I mean, you try to make it a little interesting, and it makes it fun for the brewer anyway, Romersberger said. He said they've even had bartenders come up with their own ideas and recipes. The Funk Pilsner is the number one selling beer at Funky Brew, along with Princess Allison's Raspberry Kolsch and the Bird Dog Vanilla Cream Ale. The Holy Mosaic IPA is also popular. Princess Allison's honors the memory of a woman who died of cancer. Her favorite beer was Princess Yum Yum, which isn't available in Illinois, so her parents asked them to replicate it. To this day, it is still a big hit. They also had the Golden Gridley beer, made for a local's 70th birthday party, which is something they often do for private events or benefits. It stayed on, too. The thing that I'm a little bit proud of about Funky Brew is that currently everything we have on tap has been produced here, Bill Funk said. A lot of times we're struggling to find an empty tap for what we want to get on, you know? So it's a good thing. We've got a lot of different variety of beer available. Romersberger said they've probably made about 30 kinds of beer since they started, and there are some they have yet to make at the brewery. One of the brewery's first beers was a whiskey barrel stout, and the Tex on the Peach APA was actually the first beer they had on tap. It became their signature. Additionally, Funky Brew offers a few wine selections, soda, and frozen pizzas, and they also frequently bring in food trucks. We enjoy doing this for the community. Obviously, we want to have a thriving business, but just the response from the community has been awesome the last couple of years, and we're very thankful for that, Ben Funk said. Funky Brew is open 5 to 10 on Saturdays and Sundays, and during the Gridley Farmers Market every other Thursday during the summer. Market dates left include July 23rd, August 13th, and August 27th. They also look for when customers book special events. They also partner with the local American Legion, where they cook food in the community building and bring it over to the brewery. They have a couple more events planned with them this summer, too. While Funky Brew isn't the group's full-time gig, they hope to keep adding things to the business, including signage and more memorabilia from El Paso Gridley High School. Ben Funk said it's both challenging and a joy for the team to make it all happen. His big dream, he said, is to try and vertically integrate a lot of what they do and have a sort of farm-to-table, farm-to-glass type of business, where everything in the glass is local. I never thought in a million years we'd be selling our beer that we make. So that's kind of cool, just to have the product that you can sell that you made, and the whole building itself that we put all of this work into, it's rewarding as well, Romersberger said. Just to see people enjoying the space and all that comes with it has been the best part, really. Turning now to international news and the Mideast war, the U.S. hits Iran, blocks ports, coastal defenses, missiles targeted. From Reuters, Enes Alasharai and Tala Ramadan right in Cairo. The U.S. conducted a new wave of strikes against Iran's coastal defense systems and missile sites Wednesday after reimposing a naval blockade of Iranian ports, while Iran threatened to shut off more regional energy exports. The daytime strikes mark the latest escalation of attacks and counterattacks launched by the two sides as they vie for control over the Strait of Hormuz, which carried about a fifth of the global oil and gas shipments before the war. At 6 a.m. Eastern Time today, U.S. Central Command forces began launching a wave of strikes against Iran, the U.S. military said. The strikes are designed to further degrade military capabilities Iranian forces have used to attack commercial shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. There were no immediate reports of attacks in Iranian media. U.S. Central Command said the military attacked coastal defense systems and cruise missile storage and launch sites on Iran's Greater Tumb Island and completed the wave of strikes within about 90 minutes. That followed 7 hours of strikes on Tuesday, in which the U.S. said it hit dozens of military targets near the Strait of Hormuz and Iranian coastal areas. In response, Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps said Wednesday it struck U.S. military targets in the region, including in Bahrain, Kuwait, and Jordan. It also threatened to shut off more regional energy exports, saying the U.S. must brace for the closure of all other export corridors that benefit the U.S. and its allies. Hostilities intensified since Iran said late on Saturday it closed the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. says Iran attacked seven commercial ships in the last week, leaving almost a dozen crew members killed, missing, or injured. America's evils. The war, which began with U.S. and Israeli strikes against Iran on February 28th, triggered Iranian attacks on Gulf states that host U.S. bases and caused major disruption to global energy supplies, raising fears of a surge in inflation. Oil prices edged up on Wednesday after settling Tuesday at a new one-month high. An interim ceasefire deal in the conflict, signed last month, was meant to lead to further investigations, including on Iran's nuclear program, and to a permanent truce, but a return to talks faltered. Analysts say that while the U.S. and Iran have gone back to sparring as they did before the interim ceasefire deal was signed, they are unlikely to return to full-scale war, though a risk of further escalation remains. They say Iran is signaling it could use its Houthi allies in Yemen to shut Bab el-Mandeb, opening a new front against Washington and putting two of the world's most vital energy arteries at risk. Bab el-Mandeb links the Red Sea to the Gulf of Aden, through which Saudi oil exports and substantial share of global shipping pass. Some shippers return to Red Sea routes after being deterred by Houthi attacks linked to the Gaza war that began in 2023. As a result of this year's Iran war, Iran has been trying to assert permanent control over shipping in the Strait of Hormuz and to impose fees on vessels passing through it, in what would be a major shift of the balance of power in a region where the U.S. has long acted as a guarantor of security. The IRGC said Wednesday the Strait of Hormuz would remain closed until what it described as the end of America's evils. Shipping data showed an uptick in Iran-linked ships passing through the strait before a new U.S. blockade on Iranian ports took effect. The U.S. said on Wednesday it had redirected two commercial vessels attempting to breach the blockade. Energy targets. U.S. President Trump threatened Tuesday to hit Iranian power plants and bridges next week unless Tehran resumes negotiations. "I'll save the energy targets for last, but ultimately we'll hit energy targets," Trump said. U.S. negotiators were in touch with their Iranian counterparts to tell them, "You better make a deal," Trump added. As tensions escalated, Trump floated the idea Monday of a 20% fee on shipping through the strait. On Tuesday, he scrapped the idea and said, without providing details, that he would instead seek investment deals with the Gulf states. The war has killed thousands of people and displaced millions, mainly in Iran and in Lebanon, where conflict was reignited between Israel and Iran-backed militant group Hezbollah. Iranian government spokesperson Fatma Mohajerani said at least 30 civilians were killed in recent days due to the U.S. strikes on southern Iran, state media reported on Wednesday. Iran's army and at least seven active duty and conscript personnel were killed in overnight U.S. strikes on the Banpur military base in the country's southeast. Caitlin Klepek brings us back to local news. Man accused of terrorist threats in Bloomington. A Bloomington man charged with making false threats of terrorism and violence to police officers, neighbors, and jail inmates has been detained in McLean County Jail after a judge said he appeared to be mentally unstable. Joel A. Perez, 36, returned to court Tuesday afternoon before Judge William Yoder after Judge Amy McFarland held him over from Monday court. During Tuesday's hearing, Assistant Public Defender Stuart Wallace noted he requested a continuance for Perez's detention hearing Monday to allow him to talk to the defendant, noting the defendant had not been in a good mental state at that time. After attempting to speak with Perez again Tuesday, Wallace said the defendant was not yet stabilized. Officials said Wallace agreed that for the safety of the defendant and people in court, Perez remained in jail and appeared remotely via Zoom. Perez is facing the following charges: falsely making a threat of terrorism, a Class 1 felony, threatening a public official, a Class 3 felony, falsely making a report, a Class 4 felony, false alarm complaint to 911, a Class 4 felony, and assault, a Class C misdemeanor. In giving the probate cause statement Tuesday, Assistant State's Attorney Rain Grobel said the case stems from a July 8th court appearance for a previous case in which he was found not guilty by reason of insanity. He was placed on conditional release in that case with the condition that he would not consume cannabis. That condition upset the defendant, Grobel said, and he made complaints against his defense attorney during the conclusion of the hearing. Following that hearing, Perez went around the building to the patrol lobby of the McLean County Sheriff's Office to file a report against his attorney. He was escorted out and then returned to say he would file a complaint with Bloomington Police. Shortly after, the staff received reports of someone yelling outside the recreational yard of the jail and threatening to come back with a bomb and throw it into the recreational yard, the prosecutor said. On July 9th, the Sheriff's Office and Bloomington Police were made aware that the defendant had made multiple overnight threats to a veterans assistance hotline. Grobel said Perez called the hotline 10 to 15 times. Among the calls, Perez said he was feeling homicidal and wanted to kidnap the sheriff's sergeant, and he spoke to previously, and then eat him alive, Hannibal Lecter style. Hotline officials said they believed the statements to be a real threat to harm the sergeant. Police attempted to make contact at Perez's home July 9th, and he made additional threats toward officers over the phone, Grobel said. They were unable to locate him that day. A woman who lives next door to Perez's apartment said she had been in her apartment July 10th when Perez began screaming at her through the wall and banging on the wall, Grobel said, adding that in a cell phone recording she made, Perez could be heard saying, "Who's got more firepower now?" When officers again made contact with the defendant over the phone, he said he would take the officer's soul and kill an officer if he saw one outside his home. In arguing for his release, Wallace said the defendant is an honorably discharged Air Force veteran who had successfully completed a veterans court diversion program, resulting in dismissal of three separate cases. The defense attorney said this proved the defendant could abide with the structured supervision under the right medical treatment and medication. But Yoder disagreed, noting that although the defendant's audio was muted over the Zoom stream, he was visibly agitated. The judge said that was demonstrative of an unstable mental state. The judge ruled he be detained, finding Perez posed a danger to the community that could not be mitigated by conditions of release, and set an arraignment for 9 a.m. on August 14th. Also in local news, Olivia Jacobs writes from Bloomington that Red Cross declares a blood emergency. The American Red Cross is declaring an emergency blood shortage as blood supply fell nearly 25% in June. Blood donors are urgently needed to give now to help ensure patients receive life-saving medical care without delay. The shortage is especially serious for platelets and type O positive and B negative blood, according to a news release from the national organization. A readily available blood supply serves as the backbone of modern medicine. Without it, life-saving treatments and critical access points to care are not possible, said Dr. Courtney Lawrence, a regional medical director for the American Red Cross, in a news release. Emergency departments, operating rooms, and labor and delivery units can't support patients with the most urgent needs, and cancer patients must wait. We're asking donors to give now before doctors are forced to make those difficult decisions. Since the end of May, there has been a steep decline in blood donations, creating a growing gap between supply and patient need. Red Cross distributions to hospitals currently are nearly 3,500 units higher per week than expected at a time when hospitals often see higher demand for blood products during the height of trauma season, the news release said. Busy schedules and loss of school blood drives have also contributed to the decline that could put patient care at risk if not reversed. Blood donation appointments can be made via the Blood Donor app by visiting redcrossblood.org or by calling 1-800-RED-CROSS, which is 1-800-733-2767. Those who give blood between now and July 31st will receive a Fandango movie ticket by email, up to $15 ticket price and fees. Every donation is critical for rebuilding the nation's blood supply, yet many do not realize the significant impact a single donation can have on the patients in need. A recent Red Cross survey showed a significant gap between public perception and the reality of the nation's blood supply. Fewer than 1 in 5 respondents understood that blood cannot be stockpiled because it has limited shelf life and must be continually replenished through volunteer donors. Only about half believed it was very likely that they or someone close to them would need blood one day, even though someone in the U.S. receives a blood transfusion every 2 seconds. Here are some local blood donation events in case you would like to participate. McLean County, July 16th, 12:30 to 5:30, First United Methodist Church at 210 North Chestnut in Leroy. July 17th, 12 to 5, Epiphany Catholic Church, 102 East College Avenue in Normal. July 18th, 8 to 11, North Danvers Mennonite Church, 5517 East 1950 North Road in Danvers. July 20th, at the Calvary United Methodist Church, 1700 Tawanda Avenue in Normal, from 9 a.m. to 4:15 p.m. On July 25th, the Saybrook Christian Church at 104 North Washington in Saybrook, from 8 until noon. July 29th, the Activity and Recreation Center, 600 East Willow Street in Normal, 11 to 4. On July 30th, in Normal, the Eastview Christian Church, 1500 Airport Road, 2 to 6 p.m. On July 31st, in Bloomington, the Chateau, 1621 Jumer Drive, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. The Bloomington Blood Donation Center at 1 Westport Court is open from 11:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. Monday through Wednesday, and 9 to 5 Thursday, and 7 to 3 on Friday through Sunday. For events in Livingston County, on July 22nd, in Fairbury, First Baptist Church at 701 North Street, from 12 to 6 p.m. On July 22nd, Odell, the Knights of Columbus at 108 Tremont Street, from 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock. On July 23rd, in Pontiac, the Pontiac Township Senior Community Center, 601 North Ladd Street, 11 to 5. And on July 28th, at the American Legion in Flanagan, 203 South Main Street, 130 to 630. In Tazewell County, you can make donations on July 17th in East Peoria at the Embassy Suites, 100 Conference Center Drive, from 9 a.m. till 2 p.m. And in Spring Bay at the River's Edge on July 18th at the River's Edge United Methodist Church, 500 North Chicago Street, from 8 to noon. In Morton on July 20th, Knights of Columbus, 616 West David, from 12 to 6. Also in Morton on July 27th, Blessed Sacrament School, 1020 South 1st Street, from 1 to 6. And in Tremont on July 30th, United Methodist Church, 112 West Pearl Street, from 1 to 6. And on July 31st in Pekin, Runnings from 3315 Court Street from 12 to 5. Finally, in Woodford County, there are two events on July 21st, the Thompson Community Center in Roanoke, which is on Victory Street from 11 to 4, and on July 28th in Congerville, the Congerville Village Hall, 301 East Lincoln Street, 2 to 6, July 28th. You can also visit redcrossblood.org /July for more information. Zachary Shermley of USA Today writes, Graham's death, a test for GOP in Washington. Months before they are at risk of losing full control of Capitol Hill, congressional Republicans are dealing with a lot of problems. They have a slim majority in the Senate and an even slimmer one in the House of Representatives. They've been unable recently to pass key pieces of legislation to keep the government's wheels turning, and they're struggling to reconcile the conflicting demands of an often unpredictable but still dominant party leader in President Trump. When it came to handling all of the dynamics, one man had long been one of the problem solvers, Lindsey Graham. He liked to get in the middle of everything, Senator John Kennedy, Republican of Louisiana, said. The veteran South Carolina lawmaker's death, which stunned Capitol Hill friends on both sides of the aisle, came at a critical moment for congressional Republicans, especially in the Senate, with vanishingly little time to get much more done before the midterm elections. Interparty disagreements have paralyzed President Trump's agenda in Congress. The feuds over a voting restriction bill and border security legislation, among other things, have effectively frozen the floor agenda in the House, where GOP hardliners have become increasingly angry at more moderate Senate Republicans. Trump has turned on the Senate, too, saying a handful of GOP lawmakers are getting in the way of his most important priorities. Graham, 71, was an effective tool to smooth over those differences. He could appease the most MAGA crowd and Senate institutionalists. He had good working relationships with many Democrats. He also had served in both chambers of Congress and could help resolve enmity between the House and the Senate. Perhaps most importantly, he was a consistent liaison between Trump and his close friend and Capitol Hill. He was a terrific advocate on behalf of the Senate position, Senate Majority Leader John Thune said to CNN, understanding what the president wanted to accomplish, working with him in order to do that, but was also being very clear about what it is and isn't achievable in the Senate. His voice is going to be really missed in terms of the relationship that Senate Republicans have with the president and his team, Thune said. Between now and November, there's a lot of Congress's plate, including Trump's latest request that Republicans pass more Pentagon funding as the Iran war drags on. Doing it all without Graham, formerly the powerful budget chairman, won't be easy, Senator Roger Marshall, Republican of Kansas, told USA Today. It does get more challenging, he said. Graham's Senate seat won't be vacant for long. South Carolina's Governor Henry McMaster appointed his sister, Darlene Graham Nordone, to serve the remainder of his term until January of 2027. The opening for the next term might create its own set of issues, though. A more permanent successor for Graham's six-year term will be chosen by a special primary election in August. Some House Republicans from the Palmetto State, Republicans Nancy Mace, Ralph Norman, and Russell Fry, among them, could end up running. Pamela Evett, the current lieutenant governor, is also seen as a strong contender for Graham's seat. If the House lawmakers run, campaigning-related absences could dwindle House Speaker Mike Johnson's two-vote margin. One South Carolina conservative, longtime Representative Joe Wilson, already fielded a call over the weekend from Trump, urging him not to run for precisely that reason. I assured him my goal is to remain in the House to keep his two-vote majority for the American people, Wilson wrote on social media. Congress will be out for much of August and October, leaving only the rest of July and September to pass annual government funding bills, the annual defense policy bill, a farm bill, renew a key spy law, confirm more of Trump's cabinet, and many more big to-do list items. A glimmer of GOP hope for more progress toward those things came on Monday when Representative Anna Paulina Luna, a Florida Republican who's been contributing to a weeks-long freeze of the legislative agenda, said she'd help get things going again. Okay, that concludes part one of the Pantograph for Thursday, July 16th, 2026. This is Kim Harden I'll be back in a few minutes with part two. We'll start with the obituaries, get into sports, and maybe look at another story or two. Thank you. I'll see you in a few minutes.